This is the Popmatic Podcast for November 11th, 2015. Fall book preview. Woo-hoo. Get pumped. This is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me today are...
Bill.
Amanda.
Mike.
As you can hear from the relative lack of echo...
What?
Ooh.
We are recording from inside the interview room of the Special Collection Center at the main library in downtown Nashville. This is where we normally record, or historically have recorded the podcast, and we're recording here today whether the children's department is here or not. Ha!
So there.
Yeah, there's angry
Dr.
children.
Seuss.
With tiny pitchforks and torches outside. Are those climbing for the turn of their room?
Are those kids you hear in the background? Yeah, probably. Do we just get bumped around and have to record wherever we can? Yeah, probably. But that doesn't mean that we're not going to rock your socks off on this fall books preview. If you're going to be a librarian, you got to have a little make do, and you got to record your podcast wherever you can.
And that's half the fun.
Speaking of making do, this is supposed to be the fall books preview, but as you might have noticed, it's the middle of November.
It's still fall.
So we dropped the P.
Yeah.
So let's just turn it into fall books review.
Oh.
Why a fall books review? Well, the fall is when publishers release their heavy hitters, all the big names, all the people that go on book tours. Sometimes the literature, things they think are going to sell good. Salon at 615 here at NPL, it ramps up. Fall is the time for books. That's when the Southern Festival of Books is. Why didn't we do an episode about that?
Yeah, why did we do an
Rewind.
Episode about that?
I might have been on vacation. So today...
That's right. You're hunting electric armadillos in Arkansas.
So today, we're going to tell you about this year's fall faves. Only on the Popmatic Podcast.
So, thanks to Father Capitalism, Father Christmas, the fourth quarter of the year, aka fall, as Brian mentioned, has become popular release period for big-name authors and little-named authors hoping to steal fives of sales from said big-name authors. So Elizabeth Gilbert's Big Magic, Nicholas Sparks' See Me, and a new illustrated Harry Potter edition are just a few of the popular books that will no doubt be found under someone's Christmas tree this year. As for me, I am super duper excited because my favoriteest author from the last decade not only has a new book out, but it's a new book in a brand new series. And I feel like there should be cymbal crashes right there. So from the mind that brought you The Fabulous Wizard Harry Dresden, The Aeronauts Windlass is the new steampunk world from Jim Butcher. Here's why I was nervous about it. I have never been the biggest fan of steampunk. I kind of think it overly complicates most plot lines.
I just dropped my goggles and my top hat.
And your spring, boing. Yeah.
My giant penny farthing bicycle is powered by steam.
Yeah. B, the steampunk fad is so 2005, as F, hello.
Totes.
And C, a friend's husband who usually likes Jim Butcher hated this book. Sad face, angry face, deep breath. Okay. So here's why I shouldn't have been nervous. It's still Jim Butcher. Hello. Also, the steampunk issue is kind of a teeny tiny plot point way kind of in the back. And if it hadn't really been sold as such, I probably wouldn't have even noticed it. Plus, the windlasses were really cool. And for those of you who are uninitiated, a windlass is a ship that flies in the air, not in water. So Jim Butcher can write a great sci-fi adventure story, and he's really great at building worlds. Does he borrow from others? Sure, everybody does. I would say that for this one, it's about 35% Firefly, 8% Tolkien, 5% Harry Potter, and 10% Animal Farm. And then I don't do math, so whatever's left is all Jim Butcher. And it's a thick book, but it's hard to put down because each chapter kind of ends on its own mini cliffhanger, so you want to just keep going to the next chapter and reading and reading and reading. And the basic premise is that people live in spires way up in the clouds because something, and we haven't found out yet, what has taken over the surface. So, renegade Captain Grimm of Habbo Landing pilots the windless ship Serenity, Predator, and is pressed into the service of the Spire Arch, or he's also known like the King, when a rival Spire attacks. A quartet of new recruits, including a smart-mouthed female aristocrat, her warrior cousin, another girl from an old family, and her talking cat, set sail with Captain Grimm and his crew to try to save their homeland. Now, the first book clocks in at about 630 pages.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's a commitment, but they do go by pretty quickly because, like I said, you don't want to put it down. But with all the new world building, Butcher had a lot of information to convey to properly set up his story. I can't really wait to see where the story goes. I hope the next one is 630 pages of fun, too. Maybe more. Now, a lot of good books come out in the fall. To be fair, a lot of bad books come out in the fall, too. But either way, I have a pretty strong feeling that this one is going to be my favorite.
Now, I've only read his Harry Dresden stuff. Have you tried, like, his Furies of...
The Codex series?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, it's very Tolkien. I think I might like this one a little bit better than... I liked that one, but I think I like this one a little bit better so far.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right, kiddies, it's time for another trip in the Wayback Machine. Today we're going back to March 2013, the month that Hugo Chavez of Venezuela died and Cardinal Bergoglio became Pope Francis I. Ooh. It's also the month that I, Mike, joined the Popmatic podcast.
That was a good month.
I can remember it now, like it was yesterday. I was super duper nervous. My voice was all a-shaking and a-crackling.
Because we're scary.
Yeah, you guys, you know, I was so intimidated by joining your illustrious podcast. I recommended something we didn't have for Tickle My Fancy, but it turned out in our collection a couple of years later, Bridget Bird's. Good book. Perhaps a fan of the podcast requested it? I like to think. Yeah.
If it's your dad, it doesn't count.
My dad doesn't live here.
Doesn't.
Of course, it's not like they could track his...
Anybody from faraway cities in southern continents don't count either.
Poor Gary.
Oh, poor Gary. R.I.P. I also recommended one of my favorite books of all time, Cloud Atlas by David Mitchell. Cloud Atlas, you may recall, is a series of interconnected stories that span multiple eras and genres, which then double back on themselves. It's really neat. Next, we go back in the Wayback Machine and go back to the future of August 12th of this year, the Summer Challenge episode. You remember this one as the one where Brian brings up some beef with Jesse I didn't know they had? It was
really
the best.
Friends. It's okay.
Yeah, I was like, you know, ooh, I could feel the tension. Yeah, tension. I recommended on that episode Bone Clocks, also by David Mitchell. Bone Clocks, in brief summary, is a series of interconnected vignettes featuring a woman named Holly Sykes and her various friends, associates, and enemies from the year 1984 to the year 2043. And now we arrive to the distant future that is today. Off all books preview episode, where I will recommend Slate House by that guy, David Mitchell. Ooh. It came out on October 27th. I pre-ordered it, and since we're recording this in the past, I may or may not have read it already. Knowing me.
I'm so confused.
Yeah.
That's going to happen again later in this same podcast.
Ooh, all right. Cool.
Nice.
We get to play with the future. Knowing me, and despite the fact that I was excited enough to pre-order it, I probably won't actually read it until Shocktober of 2021. Anywho.
You did say you like delayed gratification. So.
I do. Ooh, got to put this aside.
It's not delayed gratification if it's actually procrastination. It's like you can't
philosophical.
You can't
drop some knowledge on me.
You can't rationalize your delayed gratification when it's actually procrastination. That's a slippery slope.
It's a happy way to justify that.
Well, we may have to have a debate later. Tune in, listeners.
That sounds fun.
Anywho, the back of the copy, the back of the book, at least this says on Amazon, says, ooh, down the road from a working-class British pub, along the brick wall of a narrow alley, if the conditions are exactly right, you'll find the entrance to Slade House.
Whose house?
Slade House!
I had to, I'm sorry.
We'll miss you, Jeremy. A stranger will greet you by name and invite you inside. At first, you won't want to leave. Later, you'll find you can't. Every 9 years, the house's residents, an odd brother and sister, extend a unique invitation to someone who's different or lonely. A precocious teenager, a recently divorced policeman, a shy college student. But what really goes on inside Slade House? For those who find out, it's already too late. Mwahaha. Spanning 5 decades from the last days of the 1970s to the present, leafy genres and barreling forward to an astonishing conclusion, this intricately woven novel will put you into a reality-warping new vision of the haunted house story as only David Mitchell could imagine it. I am excited. It sounds kind of like House of Leaves, which I recommended way back in October of 2013, the first Shocktober episode. At least for me. I don't know what reaction we're talking about, because I don't care. And it is still my favorite horror novel ever, by which I mean House of Leaves. It also sounds like that in a combination of The Bonehawks. Ooh. I like this niche that David Mitchell is carving out, you know, the multiple genres, perspectives, histories, symbolism kind of guy. Totes Excites, Slate House.
So I was going to wonder, like, can at this point, can David Mitchell, like, write a short story or, like, a novel with, like, one plot and one set of characters? It's not, like, five books jammed into one, you know?
Well,
I was curious.
Well, between Cloud Atlas and Bone Clocks, he wrote this book with a long title that you can come in with later during corrections or something.
Like, yeah.
Like The Many Lives of Jacob Zoet.
Oh, yeah, I remember now. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, which is just one story about this Dutchman and, like...
That would be The Thousand Autumns of Jacob de Zoet by David Mitchell.
Yeah.
17th century Japan.
Yeah, I recall. Yeah, around that. So, yeah, he can.
He can. He just doesn't want to.
They're just not as popular. No, people love that book. Critics like that book.
Yeah. I've been meaning to read it, but again, delayed a graphic.
And I was, you meant, I had a feeling that there was going to be a House of Leaves reference. Yes. You were talking about a longish David Mitchell book that was like many books in one kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it is Shocktober. And I know that's your favorite horror novel. Have you, you know, Mark Danielewski has a new, like, long-form novel. Have you read that yet?
The Familiar?
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's part one of 27, so.
Does that mean no, you haven't read it?
Many podcasts to come.
I haven't read it yet. I bought the first one, was super excited. I do what I usually do, put it on a bookshelf and not read it yet. But by the taping of this, by the time this drops, part two will come out, so maybe I will have the impetus to actually read it.
The pressure's on now.
Yeah.
Off mic, I committed to read a Fryn Fisher mystery, so that's probably more hard for me than...
We didn't get it in writing, though.
So. Yeah, that's true.
I also, you know, I also have committed to read a Killer Thrillers book club selection, too.
Oh, yeah.
So I need to do that, too.
Yeah. Well, you can do what I do. I put it off until just before the meeting.
I can't.
That way, like, you know, you get everything will be fresh.
I can't read that fast.
Yeah, he's not a super book devourer.
As been established in other podcasts, I'm kind of slow.
I missed the slow. I didn't finish it.
But let's pivot from that topic.
Anyway.
Bill?
Well, a few years ago, I was about to give up on Stephen King. His novels, New McKee and Lizzie's Story, left me extremely unimpressed. Then he wrote Under the Dome, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. Well, I loved it. And after that, it seemed he started a new golden period with such books as 112263, Doctor Sleep, Mr. Mercedes, Revival, and Finder's Keeper. So now I anxiously await his new book, The Bazaar of Bad Dreams, which is, from what I have read, is a collection of 20 short stories and poems that are about meditations on morality, destiny, and regret, all that would showcase King's talent for exploring the human condition. I'm quoting the Publishers Weekly on that. So the book I'm looking forward to is The Bazaar of Broken Dreams by Stephen King. And I just got in, I haven't started reading it yet, I'm a huge fan of the comedian George Carlin. I've always liked to read his books. Very sad when he passed away. But there's a new book called Carlin Home Companion, Growing Up with George by Kelly Carlin. It's written by his daughter. From what I understand, it's a very affectionate tribute to her dad. It's not a damn you, daddy dearest. So
my father was a monster.
Monster. So I'm
going to say the curse words I would throw at my dad.
The nonfiction book is A Carlin Home Companion, Growing Up with George by Kelly Carlin, and The Bazaar of Bad Dreams, Collections of Short Stories and Poems by Stephen King.
Can I ask a Stephen King question?
Okay.
King Corner.
with Uncle Steve. Am I wrong? Didn't he retire at one point and said he wasn't going to ride anymore?
Ride anymore. Well, he was under drugs at the time. Oh. You remember he got hit by that car, and I think that was just kind of an off. He was really going through a rough, struggling. And
yeah, he did slow down, though. I mean, it seemed like he came out like 3 books a year for a while, and now it seems like maybe just one.
Which is just interesting, because he said he wasn't going to ride, and then, like you said, he's in this new, like, golden period.
He just kind of got out of it physically, mentally. There was a lot of, you know, I do know, because you know, he had that very bad accident, which a car hit him.
Yeah.
Several operations. Mm-hmm. And I also recommend, he talks of details that I highly recommend his book on writing. Even if you don't like Stephen King, that's a great book. And so he came out of that, and like I say, he's just hit this new golden period. Duma Key touches is somewhat biographical on that accident, and, you know, it, like I said, kind of started with Under the Dome. He's just hit this golden period of just page-turners.
I was going to mention, like, even when he was in the hospital, like, he still wrote, like, didn't he still write some novellas, like, during that period?
The book I'm thinking of here is Riding the Bullet, which was published in 2000 as an e-book after the date of his accident, but I'm not sure if it was written while he was convalescing.
I would be surprised if he didn't.
Yeah. So, like, he got hit by a car, and he's still writing books, which is admirable. So, and On Writing has kind of gone down as a contemporary classic, depending on who you ask. And slightly in episode correction, The Bizarre of Bad Dreams comes out November 3rd, which so that it will have been out for 1 week, but when the time this episode posts. Not a totally change topics. Well, maybe it kind of relates.
And Brian, what are you?
To pivot once again, it kind of relates to Kelly Carlin's book, Carlin Home Companion, even though it's fiction. And that is Mothers Tell Your Daughters by Bonnie Jo Campbell. I've been waiting for this book to come out all year. It's like one of my most anticipated books. It's a collection of short stories, and I hate short stories unless they're written by Bonnie Jo Campbell. So I'm very excited. Most of her stories take place in Rust Belt America, and what makes them different from the nondescript TV sitcom Nowhere Anywhere Hell World that Jeremy described when he did his review of Dark Harvest is that they're...
October Boy.
Sorry. I was trying to get into it.
I believe the actual name, if you search for it in the catalog, is Dark Harvest, but yes, we should call it October Boy. What makes them different from that kind of Midwestern story is that they're actually very social realists, right? They're very realistic and specific. You know, the characters are real people and not kind of generic stereotypes. They're also very intense. Mostly there's female protagonists in her stories. I believe in this one it's actually all female protagonists. I think that's why it's Mothers Tell Your Daughters. Most of these people are like poor people on the edge who have to make really difficult ethical decisions. I know that one of the stories is about a wife that slowly kills her husband, even though he's disabled. So maybe that's a horror story. I haven't read it yet. At the time of recording, I got the book yesterday. And most people know that I work with and maybe on this podcast is I kind of have a crush on Bonnie Jo Campbell, but she probably doesn't want to have anything to do with me. I think that she's married and she lives on a donkey farm raising apples with her family in Michigan. And
she sees enough asses on her farm.
Exactly.
Anyway,
so last night I bring the book home and I'm like, hey, look what I got. My partner just looks at it and she's like, oh, great. It's your country dream girl. She has a new book. Yes. Bonnie Jo Campbell has a new book. And yes, Ms. Campbell, I'm mad at you for not coming to the Southern Festival of Books. Maybe next year. I'm really excited. I'm sure I'll read it and have some sort of review or something on the library's blog or this podcast. Mothers Tell Your Daughters by Bonnie Jo Campbell. Hey, guys.
Hey, Brian.
Hey, Brian.
What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Well,
maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. But either way, it's tickling our fancy. Yeah.
Tickling My Fancy.
Whoa.
It's a DVD.
Aggressive tickling.
He's so happy he's angry.
Electric Boogaloo, The Wild Untold Story of Canon Films.
Oh, we got that? Oh, boy.
Yeah, we do.
All right.
The fact-based documentary written and directed by Mark Hartley, who also did Machete Maidens Unleashed, and Not Quite Hollywood, The Wild Untold Story of Ozploitation, tells the story of Menachem Golan and Yoeland Globus. Now, I'm sure I mispronounced them, but I don't care. Two Israeli movie makers, obsessed cousins who were just obsessed with movies who came to Hollywood in the 80s and chaotically started making movies in all types of genres.
Our agent Marty Baum said, look, if you guys want to just go make a film and be totally left alone, there are two new guys in town.
Menachem Golden and Yoram Globus were the heavyweights. They were the George Foremans and the Muhammad Ali's of the indie market.
Yoram Globus was the businessman behind the movie making.
Where is my money? You promise and promise and promise and you're not paying.
Menachem Golan was the movie maker.
He redubbed me with an American voice, but not a voice similar to mine.
A true ninja doesn't kill. He eliminates, and only for defensive purposes.
He's so... not ninja.
I don't know. I've never seen a ninja.
Ninja 3 The Domination managed to take The Exorcist, a ninja movie, and combine it with Flashdance.
Nuts. Just crazy nuts.
Sometimes we make better films. Sometimes we don't make such good films. But we do make films.
One of my first questions was, how much money do you think you'll be spending on it? And they said, oh, probably $10 million. I think they ended up spending about $3.75 on it.
The name of the game is to do, not just blah, 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 blah. Talk about it.
This year, the big hit for Golan and Globus is Breaking.
It really did something the United Nations was unable to do so far. Bring nations together under one groove.
Really? I mean, that's insane.
The audience wasn't prepared for the craziness, the looniness.
I felt a little stupid doing it.
Clyde the orangutan came to the office. Menachem's deciding whether to sign the orangutan to put him under contract.
It was crazy. Talking to a monkey. This would be an epic of cinema.
Blockbuster of the century.
Oh, God. We are in so much trouble.
And that's why everybody...
They put a stamp on pop culture.
It's hard to say words can in films without laughing.
At the end of the movie, I had tears in my eyes.
Menachem says, aha, I got you. I was crying because I saw my career going down the toilet and I didn't know what I was going to do next.
I hold them in huge affection, even though they ruined their movie.
It has to be seen to be believed, Electric Boogaloo, the wild untold story of Canon Films. Amanda?
Sure.
Why not?
So we've talked several times about Outlander on this podcast. And we mentioned the book by Dana Gabaldon, as well as the first half of season one, which I think is on Stars, is that?
Yeah, Stars.
I'm not cool to have cool cable, but... So the good news is we finally got the second half of season one in on DVD. The bad news is that I'm going to have to finally break down and start reading the second book, which I think is called Dragonfly and Amber.
I'd rather have to enjoy myself.
So that I'm ready when they do season two, and because it's a big book and... I've tried to start it twice and made it past the first chapter. But anyway, I talked to Susan. She said I should do it in audio. She said it's better in audio.
Because it's so good, you want to save it for later. Yeah. Delayed gratification.
That's right. I don't want to have all my fun now.
This sounds like a Monuments Men-esque. Or was that the one you it took you a year and a half or something to read?
Yes. But I made it.
Yeah.
I'm still working on it.
And you recommended it
still. The Turing book I was talking about, I'm still working on that one.
Whoa. All right. Yeah.
I'll get there. So with the second half of season one, I'm enjoying the new episodes. They're a little stressful, a little dramatic, with all the rowdy Scots and their kilts. But so far, each episode, it kind of resolves itself enough to be satisfying. Obviously, it's not as good as the book. It can't be. The book is just, there's so much there that they can't capture it on film. But this is probably the best that they could reasonably accomplish, given the constraints. This half has 8 episodes. They're probably about 50 minutes long, so it's not super time consuming. So if you have not yet seen season one, get the first half, get the second half, and enjoy. Brian?
I'm delaying my gratification on watching Outlander. I really do want to watch it. I heard it was amazing.
It really is good. I mean, it's for what they had to work with. I mean, they do a good job picking the stuff out of the material to use.
And you're right about they're not going to be able to fit all the things in from the books, but doing it as a miniseries on TV with multiple episodes makes that a lot easier.
You never could have done a movie. It would have been 16 hours long.
You could even put in rapes and murders that weren't in the original books, Game of Thrones, if that's possible.
Or what's the other one, the True Blood series, where they completely ditched the book and
did they do that?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah,
but halfway through season one, they're like, we don't need this. We can write better stuff. Let's have more sex.
Game of Thrones is going to end before the last book comes out, right?
Right. I believe so.
Yeah, they made some arrangement with George R. R. Martin where they can have a how they're going to do the ending, even though the book hasn't come out.
Well, I hope he's write something well, totally different.
Did he just put a new book out in that series? Is there one coming?
He put out a new book. I don't know if it's set in that world.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it's like a novella.
I just assumed it was part of that because that's like, all what he
it's
writes. But
set in the background of that world, but it's not like, you know, book seven or whatever.
This would be A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms by George R.R. Martin. These are the collected novellas that are prequels to the Game of Thrones series.
Book zero.
I didn't make it past book one in that series.
Cool.
So.
I really liked it, but
it's a boy
super
book.
Long.
It's really a boy. Like, my husband would like, he loves it. Not the book, the TV show, because he does.
Oh. So, yeah, Brian.
Speaking of book series and not reading, my partner and I went to the Way Late Playdate Harry Potter themed thing at the Adventure Science Center.
I saw the picture of you. It is great.
And
did you wear your Quidditch uniform?
I've never read
droopy
Harry
sword.
Potter.
Like an old frowny face.
It's really
it is great.
This was a very popular event. There was a line out the door, like down over the hill into the parking lot. Okay, like
wow.
to get in. And
so are you House Slytherin or Hufflepuff?
We both got Ravenclaw when we took the test.
You're Ravenclaw.
So
that's what I am too.
Ooh, interesting.
We're always
the smart people that don't like to fight things.
Oh well, Ravenclaw all the way. All right, Team Ravenclaw.
let
all you learn.
I know. Let's let Gryffindor fight the battle. We'll just be back doing
exactly. I'm going to read
the
book.
Yeah, exactly.
So line out the door. It's raining. Everyone's miserable. We're just standing there, like everyone's quiet, and I'm like, don't worry, baby. I won't let everyone know you never read the books. everybody, gasp and then laughter. And dirty secret, she's never read the books. And
dirty secret, you haven't either.
And she was mortified that I said this, right? I didn't think she could. Well, she has blogged and talked about at cons and stuff. We go to fan cons and stuff together about how she
does she like the movies?
Like, yes, because she talked about how her siblings were the right age that they read the books, and then she went to the movies with them, and it became like this thing in their family. So, like, if she was on our Cozies episode we're going to do, she'd probably talk about going to see the Harry Potter movies with her siblings. So, like, her fandom comes from going to see these movies with her brother and sister, and she doesn't read the books.
Ooh.
And I
My
thought she was
did that too. He didn't read the book. Yeah. He likes the movies.
Yeah, I've watched about half the movies. I don't care about the book.
And she's, you know, usually proud. She's usually proud of that. And but like she was like in this line for the Harry Potter night at the Science Center. That was not cool. I was totally in the outhouse like
yeah,
for the rest
wow.
of the night. Right,
sleeping on the couch.
Yeah. So that was just funny. Anyway, speaking of book series that some people don't read, and now to pivot to something totally different, completely different. Completely different.
Humiliating your wife.
if Jeremy was here, he could pick on me because I'm going to talk about something that has to do with the Midwest again. So, but I wanted to talk about the 1985 documentary 17 by Joel DeMont and Jeff Kreens. Now, these guys did Style Wars, the documentary about graffiti, but this was their follow-up. This is a documentary about high school students in Muncie, Indiana.
Hey, I've been there.
Ooh, Indiana connection.
I've been there, too.
Ball State University.
I've been to Indiana.
Yeah. And
my parents went to Ball State. My aunt lived there for a while.
This was supposed to be a PBS documentary as part of a series, but it got censored because it was too real. So they follow around these kids with cameras, and there's interracial dating, casual drug use. These kids kind of have double lives, the lives they have with their parents and their teachers, and then the lives they have with themselves. But
so
in,
regular teenagers.
But like in true, like sort of teenage style, like even though there's cameras rolling, they're totally like themselves, even though there's cameras around and they lie to their things. And then also, I just don't want to like spoil, but the fact that the one girl, you know, she's a white girl and she dates a black guy and like the chaos this causes in the whole town is crazy and intense.
When was this film?
Yeah, I guess
1985.
Yeah, I believe that.
And actually, what's funny is it actually kind of reminds me a lot of the films of Nashville's greatest auteur, Harmony Korine. I'm waiting for Bill to throw a Don't Bring It Down card.
My pen.
Yeah, boy. Who else? Surely there's somebody else from Nashville.
So, I mean, it kind of reminds me of like Gummo or Kids, except real. It's not as infantile as Gummo or Kids. But it has the same emotional punch because they are like real people dealing with real problems. Now, the first time I saw this film, and it was it was not put out on home video for a long time, was that the Light and Sound Machine film series at Third Man Records. And it was projected on 16 millimeter, and there was an intermission. And the intermission and being projected on 16 millimeter was a dictate of the filmmakers. It was the only way they would show the movie. They were total art snobs about it. And it was an amazing cinematic experience. At least within recent years in my life, just awesome cinema experiences I've ever had. This documentary is really freaking good. And because it's so rare, it's not shown very much, it felt like a privilege to be there in the room when it was there and to see it. But now I was surprised to see that the library has it on DVD, and I was like, what's up with this? So, like a good librarian, I went to Wikipedia, and it was basically the Wikipedia page had been vandalized.
Oh.
Someone deleted all the references, and other than the facts about the film, like when it was made and the awards that it was won, it was like, this version of the DVD is ugly looking and not approved by the filmmaker. It's censored. Don't buy it. So, like, I wondered. I was like, well, somebody's mad about this.
Yeah.
So, like, I know that there must be some kind of backstory with the DVD and if the filmmakers really want it out or not, or how, producers and rights holders and stuff can often, sort of run around creative people and their wishes. So I'm interested to see. I'll report back, try to find out what's going on with that. And I wonder too if it's just the same movie, if they're very picky about how the film is presented. Maybe they just don't want it on DVD, because then you can watch it at home, on your little screen while you feed your cat.
I wonder if they edited it differently or something, changed.
They claimed it censored.
Yeah. Well,
whoever angry with PD guys.
Whoever went in and totally vandalized the Wikipedia page and deleted all the references, who did not give a reference, said it was censored. Now, this is ironic. I always bury the lead. This actually was never aired on TV in 1985 because it was censored, because there were kids smoking pot in it. So,
You said it was uncensored because it was too real.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, so it was actually, it never aired on TV.
Right.
So, but then what they did was they took it to the festival circuit, and it won Best Documentary at Sundance.
Wow.
So, yeah.
My dad taught school in Elwood, Indiana, which is in that area.
Oh.
And I guess it would have had to have been early 80s, late 70s, early 80s. And race is such an issue in that area that the Klan still marched in the 4th of July Day parade.
Whoa.
Because he was doing marching band, and he would be in the parade and the Klan would still march. So, I mean, if that was...
Wow.
That's why it never showed on TV, because if that was a racial issue, it was huge in that area. So.
It's an intense movie.
Yeah.
It was an awesome movie.
As somebody from the South who has to hear about race stuff all the time. Wow. I saw the light show at Stone Mountain when I was a kid. That was pretty neat. Then I grew up and was like, whoa.
So the year that it won the Grand Jury Prize for Documentary at Sundance Film Festival, the jurors were D.A. Pennebaker, Fred Wiseman, and Barbara Koppel, which that's like...
Murderer's Row of the New York Yankees.
Yes, this is like the most accomplished documentary filmmakers alive.
Wow.
Gave this a prize. Of course, this is from the vandalized Wikipedia page, so maybe it's a lie.
It could be a lie.
But here's what's not a lie on the Wikipedia page, which is interesting, and people often ignore this about Wikipedia. Down in the external links, you can actually see the original filmmaker's notes on About 17. And it's actually a multi-page document talking about why it was originally censored and the circumstances of its not being broadcast and why. And basically the gist is that there's a corporate sponsor was Xerox, and they heard that there were kids doing drugs in the movie. Not the fact that it's about a crazy town being torn apart by racism, but anyway.
That's just a bonus point.
Yeah, that's just like a bonus point. Yeah. Or like you would actually say that, like, yeah, it's craziness. But anyway, really cool. 17.
Wow.
And this movie is so good.
We have it on
DVD. I don't do Tickle My Fancy that much. Nothing tickles my fancy. I'm an inhuman monster. But 17 on DVD tickles my fancy. Mike, I've been talking for way too long. Oh. Please save the podcast.
I'll try, but it sounds like I'll just throw back in the dirt. So every month for this podcast, here's some behind the curtain, behind the scenes stuff again. Ooh, Brian asked us for topics. And I found that throughout this year that there's anniversaries for lots of events that we had never found time to cover in the podcast. So I thought I would bring them up here before, we eventually do our awards episodes or the poppies return. The only name that I do. I did write a note here that says that Brian doesn't really have to do every single one of these. He does enough work, gang. Everybody should appreciate Brian. here are some highlights I found looking through the interwebs. 2015 is the 25th anniversary of Nelson Mandela being freed from prison. The 40th anniversary of Fawlty Towers, one of the greatest sitcoms of all time. The 50th anniversary of the death of Winston Churchill and Malcolm X.
I want to be in a room with them together.
Yeah, it's so weird. It's like,
like having a beer, see what would happen.
It's kind of like John F. Kennedy and the guy who wrote Brave New World.
Thomas Huxley.
Thomas Huxley died the same day. So, like, you know, Thomas Huxley was like page 10 news.
Aldous Huxley.
Yeah, Thomas was somebody.
You're taking all my corrections away. What's my role here? Corrections. I don't even know what I'm doing.
That's his cousin.
There you go. Hux Huxley. 60th anniversary of the Guinness Book of World Records, one of my favorite book series ever.
You said you have written there when I was a kid, and you left that off.
When I was a child, I've not read it much since. Now they've turned to this crappy, like, hardcover version, which is all, like, photographs and stuff, and it's, like, not all the precious words.
I learned that they're not doing a sleep deprivation category anymore.
Oh. I know why.
Because it drives people crazy.
Yeah. They stopped doing another one. It was like kids who flew in around the world because one child died while in their, like, tiny plane.
Attempting.
Or was it a boat? I don't know. Anyway, future collection. 70th anniversary of the end of World War II. Let's see. This year will be the 100th birthday of Frank Sinatra, Ingrid Bergman, and mystery author Ross McDonald.
We got a bunch of reprints, or at least we got some backlist titles from Black Lizard, from Ross McDonald.
Yeah, Lou Archer, good stuff. It's also the 100th anniversary of Peter Pan.
Never heard
of
it. Hence that terrible movie.
Oh, I thought you were talking about peanut butter.
No. I love peanut butter. The honey version of the Peter Pan peanut butter. Greatest thing on earth.
I love Peter Pan. I grew up on Peter Pan peanut butter.
There's a big bin of expired cookie butter at Kroger.
I don't know about the anniversary.
I'll be right back.
On clearance. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll have to write 37 pages about that.
And further proof that I am an inhuman monster, and so is my partner. We were there, and I'm like, you want this? She's like, I don't like that stuff. And I was like,
whoa. Cookie butter or peanut butter?
I've never had
cookie butter.
Does that make me a bad person?
One that I recommended is great. The one that Jeremy recommended is garbage. It was on the record of saying that.
For the record, it's the one that you recommended, which is at Kroger.
Yeah.
Jeremy's a snob. The one that he recommended is only at Trader Joe's.
Yeah. A good one I heard is at Trader Joe's.
Yeah, I got the one at Trader Joe's that has, like, no sugar in it.
This year, Trader Joe's has pumpkin spice cookie butter, though.
I
feel like there's some out.
Field trip.
Yeah, man. Whoa. Podcast. Pop-matic special edition, guys.
This just went off the rails.
Anyway, let's see. It's also the 150th birthday of Robert W. Chambers, author of The King in Yellow, a book I've recommended on here many times, as well as Rudyard Kipling, Warren G. Harding, and Finnish composer Jean Sibelius, which I listened to before this podcast. Really good stuff.
I like Sibelius.
Try out Finlandia again.
Yep.
This is also the 750th birthday of Dante, the author of Divine Comedy, the greatest poem of all time.
I talked about in my blog post on Off the Shelf.
You did.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you did recently.
Basically set up the Italian language as it's known today.
Yeah, yeah. Very nice. Good books. And lastly, I forgot. 150th anniversary of the publication of Alice in Wonderland. One of my favorite books. Good stuff.
I hate that book.
You don't like Alice in Wonderland?
I don't like Alice in Wonderland. Right, and I've read through The Looking Glass, too, and it didn't get better.
Let me guess, you don't like that.
I was going to say Library Card Revoked. I've actually never read that.
Oh, get out. Oh.
Are you revoking mine for not liking it or yours for not reading it?
Me for not reading it.
Because I lost mine on Jane Austen, so I don't have mine.
Lastly, the 800th anniversary of the Magna Carta.
Oh, good stuff. I like that.
Yeah, we could have done that for an
English. That's a very helpful document.
I ask you to save the podcast. I don't know if that list of anniversaries
I don't know if they saved anything.
I don't know if that list of anniversaries did.
That was good.
Yeah.
Sibelius.
I am fascinated, though, that you didn't read the list in order.
No, I meant to put it in chronological order, and then I didn't have the time, so I did it in my head as I was reading it.
Oh.
Yeah, I forgot. The most important anniversary on this list, guys, 33rd anniversary of Creepshow.
We have started with that one.
Check it out.
Stephen King's in that movie. Do you guys know that?
I do know that. I think Mike likes it a little bit.
It's not even my favorite movie. I just, like, bring it up all the time.
I can top that.
Oh.
This Friday, if everything goes as planned, I'm going to be interviewing Paul Hirsch, who edited the segment of Crate in the Creep Show.
Ooh.
Mike's head just exploded.
Yeah. All right. Whoa.
And he also edited this other little thing called Star Wars. But
Whatever, dude.
Star Wars? Wow. What?
Star Crash? That movie's terrible. Corrections!
Corrections to the corrections. These are corrections to the October 14th episode of the Popmatic podcast. This was the last audio version of the podcast that was posted approximately 1 month ago.
Bill said Gahan Wilson's comics need to be seen and not described, but then he described one later in the show. It worked okay.
It was a fun moment.
Mike blamed Jeremy for all his bad puns, but then later it was revealed that actually it's the Crypt Keeper's fault.
One was an ad lib and one was written.
The library does not have Creepshow. Oh, sorry, I mean Tales from the Crypt.
Oh, well, that was going to be my correction, that in true Halloween fashion, I treated you to a full-length recommendation in Tales from the Crypt, only to find out it was a trick.
Oh, like
when you tried to look it up.
Like putting a razor blade in the candied apple.
That's right.
That's very nice of you.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
I'd say that I did that on purpose, but I didn't.
You know,
it just worked out nicely that way.
Yeah.
It's way past Halloween, but...
That's true.
You know that Neil Gaiman did a thing this year where he tried to get people to give away books instead of candy?
I'm sure the kids took that well.
Oh, that's when Jenny Lawson was here at Salon at 615, she's like, you know, it's a really good idea, but there's like... 10% of the kids are going to be so happy and so excited, and the rest of the kids are just going to be really, really,
I love
really
reading
disappointed
books
and mad.
For my life. I would have egged his house.
Oh, man, War and Peace. Oh. It sucks. Snickers.
Snickers and Peace.
Warheads
and Peace. Yes.
Reese's and Pieces.
Alice in Candyland.
I don't even know if this even made it in the show, but at some point I said that I had not talked about Twin Peaks before during the feature segment of an episode of the Popmatic podcast, but I had, in fact, back in the March 2014 episode, the theme was animals as a tie-in with We Are All Completely Beside Ourselves by Karen Joy Fowler, which was the Nashville Reads at that time. I talked about the birds in the TV show Twin Peaks, so I apologize for overindulging in my personal preferences. But for more information about my personal preferences on the off-the-shelf blog and candy and razor blades.
Razor blades and candy?
We probably have books of just puns, too, if you like to indulge in puns.
Ooh.
You can go to...
www.library.nashville.org.
Tonight's theme music is by
Adam Z.
Next week, we get...
Cozy up to the fire.
Cozy.
That's
cozy.
Right. Ooh, get by the fire, listeners. Ooh.
There might be recipes. A lot of cozies have recipes.
Fall into books.
Well, I was very lucky after the accident because I felt like I was done because I was in a lot of pain. And when you're in that situation, you don't feel much like writing. At the time of the accident, I had a book called On Writing that was about three quarters done. And my wife, who's very wise, a lot of times she'll say to me, you need to slow down, you need to take time off to enjoy all the good things in life that your good fortune is provided for you. And she knew after that accident that what I really needed to do to find my way back was to work. But I can still bring it when I really have to. You know, I'm old, but I'm not dead, so I can still wind up in fire. And I think that, you know, one of the things behind Revival was to say to people who really like books like Pet Sematary and The Shining, I wanted to see if I could still bring a real scare to people and write the sort of book where people would say, it's a great story, but it scared the hell out of me and I had to keep the lights on.